Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Of course, every investor's goal is profits, leveraging your invested dollars to grow your retirement portfolio. But during volatile times, achieving this goal takes a well-reasoned strategy to turn sudden market moves into profits. Profits and protection, taking advantage of volatile times. That's our latest addition to the webinar library open to InvestTalk insiders. To join up for free, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. Now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, May 23rd, 2016 edition of InvestTalk, and thank you all for being here on this Monday. It was a modest Monday, not a whole lot going on in the market, but there was some modest moves. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But our goal each and every weekday is to touch on the things that matter most to you. This is a two-way conversation. This isn't something that we just, is just for us to sit here and talk about whatever we want to talk about. I can do that all day. Steve and I and other analysts in the office, we talk about different topics all the time. Okay, so this isn't something I need to do and come here and just spew my ideas. I want to hear from you. I want to know what's on your mind. Okay, what's most important topic to you? I try to urge callers to call in sooner rather than later. Don't wait till the end of the show. Get your question in early so I have time to answer it. And maybe I have to do some research during some breaks and find the best answer for you as well. So being in early on your calls always, always helps. Now, the American Association of Individual Investors, their sentiment survey measures the percentage of individual investors who are bullish, bearish, and neutral on the stock market over the next 6 months. Now, individuals are polled for the ranks of the AAII membership on a weekly basis, and only one vote per member is accepted in each weekly voting period. Now, at the week ending last week, 5/18/2016, data represents what direction members feel the stock market will be in the next 6 months. Now, 19.3% are bullish, 46.6% are neutral, and 34% are bearish. Now, since last week's survey, the bearish folks have increased by a couple of points, and investors are continuing to feel the uncertainty in the market. And that's understandable. We've had a pretty whipsawing market throughout 2016 so far. So what are you feeling? Are you running for the hills? Are you looking over your shoulder, maybe? How can you beef up your defense? Sometimes defense is the most important aspect of a winning strategy. Now, one way to protect your portfolio is to put on a hedge. Do you know how to do that? This will protect a portion of your portfolio if the market falls. They go up when the market goes down. Now, the most widely known way of hedging is to short the market or short individual stocks. Do you know how that works? Well, basically, you're borrowing the stock and you're selling it today at a certain price, and you're betting or hoping that the market goes down or that individual name goes down that you're shorting, and you buy it back later at a lower price and you make the money. So it's just the inverse of buying a stock or buying an index. And I talk about this all the time, is that opportunity comes in different forms. And when I say that, I mean opportunity isn't always buying. Opportunity can mean selling. Think about 2005 and 2006, especially if you lived in the bubble markets of, you know, California and Nevada and Arizona and Florida, etc. And there were other areas as well, but those are the main areas. And you owned a home or you had investments in property in those areas. What was the best opportunity? Some might say there was an opportunity, and I would say you're wrong. The opportunity was to sell if you have those assets. Now, selling short home prices is difficult. There are some exotic instruments, etc. But if you owned a home or multiple homes during that time, that was a good time to sell. And I'd argue today is very similar. So that's the same thing with stocks. You know, you might be looking around saying, what do I do? Where are my opportunities? Well, it could be right in front of you in your portfolio to sell overpriced names. And, you know, generally the market is overpriced. There are values. There are opportunities. Just like in 2005 and 6, there were opportunities in real estate. They were just few and far between. Okay? Now, shorting is a skill. It's something that you have to really understand. And you have to understand the risks involved. And you need to have your outs. You need to have your risk tolerance. And you have to understand how it fits within your portfolio and your strategy. So you can short individual names or you can use ETFs. There's ETFs like PSQ and DOG and SH, all are single levered, they don't use leverage, single levered ETFs that short the individual indexes. So PSQ is the Qs, DOG is the Dow, and SH is the S&P. So do you have a question about hedging? Bring your questions or comments, whatever it is, to us this hour. Before we go any further, however, let's check in with our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Rose. My question is, I need more tax deferrals or exemption-type investments. One thing is I have two toddlers that I'd like to start putting money away for college or what have you, savings, hopefully that are tax shelters. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, well, there are college savings plans since you have toddlers. There are different types, 529s, Coverdales, etc. So look into those. Those can be a way to defer some taxes. Make sure you're maxing out your 401k if you have a 401k available to you at work. Or maybe it's a 403b or some other tax-deferred savings vehicle. You can max out your IRA. If you have an IRA or maybe you don't, set up one. So those are certain ways. There are ways to do it, you know, in real estate. If you're looking to invest in real estate and you can depreciate the value of that home or that property. So there's ways that you can shield from some taxes. But I always say you talk to an accountant. Accountants are going to know all the different ways for you, a good accountant anyway. All the different ways that you can avoid taxes, reduce your tax bill for your given year, and hopefully also align that with your goals. Because, you know, you have to, you don't get too blinded by ways to defer taxes or save on your tax bill. If it doesn't fit with your goals, your long-term goals, then it doesn't make sense. I've seen many people who do things to avoid taxes that just causes headaches or drives them into the wrong path that they weren't thinking of going down or didn't need to go down because, you know, they're just looking to avoid taxes, and that causes more headaches in other areas down the line. So make sure whatever you do to avoid those taxes is in line with your goals. Now, let's take a text question real quick. Dave from PA says, Justin mentioned a 3% cashback Amazon card. I'd like to hear more about this or any other high rate cashback card. Thanks, Dave. It's pretty simple. Amazon offers a credit card. I think it's a Visa card. Any purchases through Amazon.com, you get 3% back. I signed up for it, so I run all my Amazon purchases through that. Pay it off at the end of the month. Get my nice 3% back. I just got it, so I don't want to tout it too much. I don't really tout credit cards or anything like that. But, you know, if used properly, they can A, give you nice cash back bonuses. I mean, I know I have, and Steve also has the Costco American Express card, which will now turn into the Citi Costco card, which I think is going to give even better cash back bonuses. I have some Visa cards, Freedom cards that do. There's a lot of cards out there that will give you cash back. You just have to make sure A, you're not paying an annual fee, okay, and B, that you got to remember these cards have higher interest rates on them than your typical cash back or typical credit card. So if you're going to carry a balance, it doesn't really make a lot of sense because you might be getting 2 or 3% back, but you're paying 4, 5, 6, 7% higher interest rate. Kind of doesn't make sense, right? So make sure that whatever credit card you have is aligned with your needs and who you are, and obviously you should be trying to pay off those credit cards each and every month. Now, glad you can spend some time with us today. Don't hesitate to ask any money questions that's on your mind. Do you have questions about risk? It's good to know your own true attitude about risk. Take our risk analysis test. It is completely free. It's very simple. It only takes a couple minutes. It's right there on investtalk.com. So go there, take it. It'll give you a score of 1 to 99. The higher that number, the more risk tolerant you are. And then we can help you see if your current portfolio is aligned with that risk tolerance. And it's important for it to be. Now, I welcome your call. Give me a call. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on the hour today. We have about 40 minutes left in the show, but it goes by quick, so call in sooner rather than later. Now, how to protect your portfolio against black swans. Those are unpredictable major market events, and we're going to talk about that. I'm going to go back over the last 15 years or so and kind of rehash some of the major market events that we've seen, and this has shaped or will shape your thought process when it comes to investing, and it's shaped a lot of people's thought process. But it's important to keep your eye on the prize, and I think the capper to this is the most important thing, and I'm going to get to that in a little bit. I also want to talk about behavioral biases. What are the behavioral biases that affect your investment decisions? Now, we all are biased in some way. We all are. And that drives us to make certain decisions. Now, some are natural biases that are based on human emotion, because we're emotional creatures. Some are biases that are developed over time because of our experiences. So I'm going to talk about those, and being aware of them is the first step to helping you avoid using those biases to make poor decisions. So I'm going to talk about that. And number one financial regret for older Americans. What are they? There's a list, and I think it will be instructive for you, especially maybe our younger listeners who maybe aren't quite in retirement yet, to see what are those retirees saying and how might that help you make better decisions today. And then three reasons not to buy a house just for price speculation. I love this one because I'm a licensed realtor, but I have a healthy understanding of the real estate market and what makes sense when you're making that decision on real estate. And so a lot of people have the wrong things in mind, especially if they're looking to invest in real estate, right? Now, this is Invest Talk. As we enter an unpredictable summer with the expected volatility that we've seen, many investors flock or stay invested in large cap branded companies. Invest Talk insiders can see our brand new list of overvalued companies. What companies out there are overvalued? Are you holding any of them? Maybe you should be taking your gains on them, or maybe just sell them outright. You can sign up for free on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, before we get to a live caller, let's take a quick look at the market today. You have the Dow off 8 points, the S&P off 4, and the NASDAQ off 3. Very, very mild day on the markets overall. I think the market's really trying to figure out what the Fed is going to do in June. There's starting to be more talk about from the Fed presidents that the conditions for another rate hike are close. And I think the Fed wants to raise rates. And I think what happened was, you know, you had the big sell-off in January and we bottomed in February after really the Fed took off. You know, going into the year, it was saying, oh, we're going to raise it 4 times. So you figure, okay, the Fed's going to raise pretty much 1 time per quarter. Well, when you have the big sell-off in January and February, that's cut off the first half of the first quarter, and everyone said, well, there's no way that they're going to raise rates this quarter. So now they said, okay, well, we still might do it 2 or 3 times, right? And the market said, oh, okay, if the Fed's not going to do anything, it rallies. You know, you have a risk-on phase. And now the Fed's back to, okay, the market's rallied, the S&P's about flat on the year. Everything seems to be kind of okay. So we're going to start talking up a Fed rate hike in June. See if we can get away with it without really crushing the market. I think that's what we're trying to do. If the market goes down a lot because of Fed rate hike talk, that's what they're going to do. They're not going to raise rates. So I think they're going to try to raise in June or July. I think they're leaning towards July because of the Brexit vote. The Brexit vote, I think, is just a few days after the June meeting. So they don't want to compound a problem by raising in June and then possibly a few days later having a Brexit vote to leave the EU, which could be a big global market disruptor. And so I think what they're going to say in June is, as long as everything goes right, which means there's no Brexit and there's no other major problems like Greece, which that's another problem that's starting to rear its ugly head again, we're going to raise in July. So I think that's what they're going to do. But the market's starting to think, okay, maybe they could raise in June, but still the numbers don't say so. So the Fed and the market are still playing this delicate dance. Let's go to Bobby in Atlanta.
Hey, Justin, how you doing?
Doing good. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for asking. Hey, what do you think on Target? It's up like, I guess, 20% in the past month or so.
Yep.
So I was thinking of buying some.
Well, Target's—it's a great company. They're obviously having issues because of Amazon. A lot of retailers are. They're probably dealing with it better than most retailers because of their diversified product base and their consistent traffic in their stores, and consumer spending still is decent. But their margins are being squeezed, just like a lot of retailers are. But I do think Targets and the Walmarts of the world are best suited to compete in a market where Amazon is continuing to take share and online shopping is continuing to take share. Because what does Amazon have? Amazon has a lot of different types of products. Well, what do Target and Walmart have? They have a lot of different types of products. So they can effectively compete. Whereas these, if you're noticing like the likes of Sports Authority, Sports Chalet, a lot of these sports specific stores are going out of business because, you know, it's too niche. So I like that you're looking at Target. It is pretty cheap. Now the biggest worry is if you go into a recession, which we think is certainly a good possibility over the next 18 to 24 months, you're not only going to have the headwinds from Amazon and online retailing, but they're also going to have the headwinds of lower consumer spending. So if you're willing to ride out that volatility, I think Target is cheap long term. But there's certainly a big risk of it going down much more. I'm talking into like the low 50s. Now it's in the high 60s. I think that would be a better long-term purchase. But I think you'll also do well long-term here as well. So it depends on your time horizon.
Yeah, it's probably 5+ years. So.
Yeah, so if you're looking long-term to start a position, I think this is actually a decent place to start a position. And then, you know, dollar cost average into it as it if it declines more.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your wisdom.
No problem. No problem, Bobby. Thanks for calling. Let's go to, are we going to a text question? We are. Let's do a couple text questions. One is from Eric from Oregon. He says, I own ELP. This is, what is E? This is an ADR. Try to look it up real quick. It's definitely an Hispanic sounding name. Energy company Aperena. He listed it as something else in the Spanish form. This company is domiciled in, where is this? Is it Brazil? I'm trying to find it. It's cheap. The problem is you're going to have the headwinds from Brazil. Let me make sure this is Brazil. Is it Brazil? It is Brazil. That's what I thought. Okay, yields about 2%. It's a utility. They're obviously having major problems with their impeachment of their president, a lot of disruptions in that country. Long term, I think it's good. I think Brazil will pull out of it. You know, their numbers and earnings are down, but long term, their cash flows are still decent, and it's a utility. So I don't think they're going out of business. So I kind of like it long term, but you have to understand it's high risk. You're gonna have a lot of volatility in the interim, and you need to have a long term time horizon on it. Now, we're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. You have a standing invitation to try our free and award-winning risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. Sizing up your risk is essential to optimizing your retirement planning approach. Just go to investtalk.com, takes just maybe 3-4 minutes, and click on the Invest Talk tab. Give it a try. We continue now with this Monday, May 23rd, Invest Talk. Is there evidence that supports a rosy long-term outlook? What signs do you look for that raise an economic warning flag? Ask Justin about it. 888-99-CHART, anytime, 24 hours a day.
Hey guys, it's Rich in Austin, Texas. I had a question about CVS Health. I'm an employee, and so they offer a 10% discount on stock purchases for the company, and I wanted to find out if you guys thought that was a good deal or not, and based on the current price. And the thing that has me a little cautious is it's an 18-month hold period before I'd be able to do anything with the stock, and that seems a little longer than most, but I didn't know if that should be a big turnoff or not, or if I should go ahead and do it. I want to get your guys' thoughts on the company overall. Thanks for your help. I love the show. I listen every day. I've learned a lot in the last couple months since I started listening to it.
All right. Well, I appreciate those kind words. And he's looking at CVS Health. He works for the company. He gets a 15% discount on the stock. Right now, I think it's a little overvalued. It's in a downtrend. It yields 1.7%. But I think the healthcare industry is going to be starting about with the pressure on drug prices and all the companies that are involved with making, selling, delivering drugs, I think are going to enter a period of pressure on profitability and also negative sentiment, or the positive sentiment turning into negative sentiment from the investor community because of uncertainty of, okay, drug prices were growing, right? And now there's a lot of attention on the types of drug companies out there and how they are pushing more sales. Valiant was a kind of the poster child of this. There's a lot of pressure from Congress on why companies are pushing up drug prices. There was an interesting article, I think, in Business Week that I saw that basically showed that back when Medicare Part D was passed in the early 2000s, right? It used to be where drug companies could help pay for copays for traditional drug purchases through traditional healthcare plans. That was legal. But once Medicare Part D was passed, they weren't allowed to do that. So what they did is they funded charities to help pay for the copays for Medicare and Medicaid drugs. So it's one of those things where another shot across the bow of shadiness from the drug industry. And I think that CVS is going to be caught up in that whirlwind. So, you know, typically, if this was a company that was steady and didn't have a lot of worries, a lot of potential risks involved with it, I would say 15%, great. I would take it all day and then 18 months sell it. And that's kind of what I would do, but maybe be more selective when it does go down a decent amount. That's when you do it. Be more opportunistic with it. Until the cloud that is now building over the drug industry goes away. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So for most people, I think that 15% is great, and then you can roll it. What I would try to do typically is take the 15% and then roll it, right? So I'm buying 15% or 50% discount every paycheck for the next X number of months, for the next 18 months. And then say 100 shares or 10 shares every paycheck, for example. Then in 18 months, sell 10 shares, right? And then next pay period, sell 10 more shares because, you know, it's kind of like a laddered CD type of thing. Think of it that way. That I would try to start that strategy, but right now there's a lot of risk in CVS. So I'm not sure I would do it for CVS, but think about it when things kind of clear up for the industry. Now let's talk about black swan events. Now ever since 2000, you've had natural disasters like Hurricane Katrina. You obviously had the 9/11 terrorist attacks. We had Arab Spring shocks back in 2011, 12. You've had Greece. You've had China devaluing their currency. Systematic failures like in Europe and Japan. These all have wide-ranging global ramifications. A lot of people call them black swan events. Now, in the past, we've experienced these black swan events every once in a while. And when I say black swan, I think the term is a little bit overused, but basically they are events that are very hard to predict. Hard to foresee, right? For example, the Brexit coming up I believe that's next month. You can kind of see it. It doesn't kind of come out of nowhere. We can kind of tell that there's a risk to this. And it's kind of right now 50-50 still, but at least people can see it. Whereas, you know, 9/11 is kind of was out of the blue. Greece, if you were in the know and you understood geopolitical politics, you kind of saw it, but it was still difficult. The financial crisis, you know, we even said it on air about the housing bubble. We knew it was a bubble. We didn't quite know the wide-ranging ramifications that bubble would have on banks and the global financial system. So in a way, that was kind of out of the blue, even though it was pretty easy to see that there was a housing bubble. It's just a matter of when it was going to blow up and how bad it was going to be. And it was a little bit worse than expected. But, you know, typically these are things that kind of come out of the blue. So how do you handle them? Well, first, you have to keep the proper perspective. Keep your fears in check. We're going to have major shocks over the next decade, two decades, three decades. Understand that. Know that they're there, but don't freak out and make panic decisions because they happen. Now, you hear a lot from gurus and pundits, social media, you know, friends at work, family, etc. There's so much information being thrown at us. But this is all just noise, and it keeps us... it keeps us from thinking about our goals and objectives. Now, your gut is more likely to be right more often than any market prognosticator, right? So you need to set a strategy for your investment goals, your preferences, your priorities, your risk tolerance, because that's the only benchmark that really matters. You know, people follow the Dow or the S&P, But your benchmark is what matters the most. Okay? And why is that important? Well, because so many people, they chase returns. They chase. And this is what we try to help clients avoid, is chasing. Now, and giving them perspective of what they need. Because if you can get 7, 8% returns to achieve your goal, what does it matter if some fund or some company made 27% last year? If you did what you needed to do, your performance was what you needed to make to achieve your goal. So this is what we talk about with clients when we sit down and discuss with them, is are you invested along with your risk tolerance, along with your goals? Because so many people, they take too much risk and jeopardize their goals when they can just take a modest amount of risk and reach their goals with a lot less jeopardizing their nest egg, right? So keeping your eye on your goals will keep you level-headed. Now I want to tell you about a useful info sheet that could be a help to you. 10 questions to ask when picking an agent. I know there's a lot of riffraff in the real estate market. Real estate agents. People use their cousin, their friend that don't do a lot of deals. So you need to make sure you ask the proper questions when you're approaching an agent. You know, I'm a licensed realtor, so I know what makes a good agent. Agents can cost you a lot of money, but they can also save you thousands of dollars. If a good agent can maximize what you get from your home, your sale of your home, they're well worth whatever they charge. I see so many people, they skimp on a commission. They say, oh, well, I'm only paying 4% versus 4.5% or 4.5% versus 5%. And it saves them, you know, $800. Well, if your home sells for $15,000 less because of that, did you really save money? Probably not. So you have to ask the right questions when you're looking for help in buying, selling, investing in real estate. So you have instant access to this useful document when you sign up for free to be an InvestTalk Insider. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
For many investors, it's a turning point, spending an hour with a registered investment advisor for a retirement review, getting a second opinion about your accounts and your direction. Are you going to meet your targeted goals on your current path? It just costs an hour. Steve will be in San Jose this Wednesday, May 25th, for these individual one-hour informal meetings. And if you're out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve on Skype or by telephone on May 31st. To schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Hi, this is Lyco. My question is, what is the major difference between HPE and HPQ? You know, both representing Hewlett-Packard. And also, which one of those two do you feel is more undervalued? Thank you so much, and incredible show.
Incredible. I like that term. Incredible. So he's looking at HPQ versus HPE. Now, this is Hewlett-Packard, and Hewlett-Packard split off into just Hewlett-Packard, HP, and HP Enterprise. And the difference is HPE, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, they're focusing on big enterprise accounts. You're talking about large corporations, big banks that they service. You know, all types of, you're thinking of Fortune 500 companies, Fortune 5,000 companies. Okay. Those are the companies that HPE services. Now, HPQ is more focused on small, medium-sized businesses, individual consumers, you know, you're thinking laptops and, you know, home computers and things like that. So it's just a different segment of clientele. I think it's easier to compete with for HPE. Their profit, I gotta look at their profitability. Let me look at, trying to find their profitability here. There we go. So their gross margins, HPE's gross margins are about 28%. 28%. And if you look at HPQ's gross margins, they're about 18%. So HPE is more profitable. Now, what is a better value? That's a pretty good question. Because if you're looking at HPQ's dividend, you're getting a 4.25%. The PE ratio is around, where are we here? I have so many systems up. It can be difficult to track these. HPQ's PE is 5. That's really low, but their sales are declining. 52.7% last quarter, or 2 quarters ago. That was probably because of the spin-off. Down 12% last quarter, whereas HPE, they're about flat, up 2% in sales last quarter. So business is a little stronger. PE is about 13, below book value. Both are pretty cheap. I wouldn't say one is way cheaper than the other. I know a lot of people think like to look at PE, but I like to look at other things as well. So I would say HPE is cheaper. You're getting less of a dividend, but I like the fact that their sales aren't slowing down. They're much more profitable. Their business is more sustainable, and they're going to have less pressure during a downturn than an HPQ would. So it's a good question. I like how he's looking at the different types of businesses and figuring out which one is best for his portfolio as opposed to just going at it blindly. Now let's talk about bias. Everyone has some biases. Now one of the big this is one of the biggest challenge these are one of the biggest challenges people have when making good investment decisions is overcoming their instinctive behavioral biases. Now, the concept of behavioral finance helps us recognize the natural biases that lead us to making illogical decisions and often irrational decisions when it comes to investments or finance. Now, a prime example of this is the concept of prospect theory. This is the idea that as humans, our emotional response to perceived losses is different than that of perceived gains. According to prospect theory, losses for an investment feel twice as painful as gains feel good. So meaning most people are more sensitive to losses than they get excited about gains. And this is kind of backwards. So biases can help also be emotional and a tendency to take action based on feelings rather than facts. And so what we try to help you do here is to avoid those emotional decisions. So after the break, I'm going to get to all the different types, from anchoring to confirmation bias to regret aversion bias. There's so many. I'm going to get to these after the break. Now you're listening to InvestTalk. We have about 10 more minutes left in the show, so if you're going to give us a call, do it now. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein. If you still have a question, we still have time. 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. Let's go to John in San Francisco. How are you doing, John?
Yes, hi. So I have a question for you. I know that on the call, on the show, you guys go and talk about overvalue, undervalue companies. So which measure do you use to evaluate that? I know that the PE is one piece of it, but is if a company doesn't make money, how do you evaluate that?
If the company doesn't make money, it's extremely hard to value it. That would be more
Okay.
of on a balance sheet basis. What kind of assets are they holding? Cash, plant, property, equipment. That gets far more complex, and that's extremely difficult. It takes a lot of expertise.
Oh, okay. So something like Tesla, like that's
Yeah,
something that's really
Tesla
tough to.
just incinerates cash, and that's speculation. That's not investing. That's speculating that they'll be okay. able to deliver on their product promises in a timely fashion and also make it profitable. The Tesla is highly speculative.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, John. Let's get to, finally, investment biases, like I said before the break. And there's different types. So let's start with the first one is anchoring or confirmation bias. Now, first impressions can be very hard to shake. You know, they always say first impressions are the most important. And it's true because the way you perceive something right off the bat will shape how you think about that particular investment, whether or person who's maybe touting that particular investment, right? And so that will also push you into confirmation bias. And what that will do is you will look for things to back up your view of that particular person or that investment. You know, this happens in politics a lot. You know, the liberals aren't watching Fox News generally. Why? Because the things on Fox News tend to counter what they want to hear, whereas conservatives tend to watch Fox News because it jives with what they want to hear, and vice versa. The you know MSNBC, for example, you know. So you people seek out information that confirms what they have in their mind, and that happens with investments as well. Then regret aversion. Also known as loss aversion. And regret aversion describes wanting to avoid the feeling of regret experienced after making a choice with a negative outcome. So one could be something goes down, you buy something, it goes down in value, and you don't want to sell because you know that locks in that negative decision. There's disposition bias. This refers to a tendency to label an investment as a winner or loser. You know, this I think of this as you know, all the people that grew up in the 80s and 90s, they love stocks, right? Or people maybe that bought real estate in the mid-2000s and got burned. They have may have a negative bias towards real estate, okay? So that's things that will shape events that happen in your life that will shape your biases. Then hindsight bias. This leads an investor to believe that after the fact, that the onset of a past event was predictable, completely obvious, whereas in fact it was not. It was difficult to predict. Familiarity bias. This comes to when people like a particular investment or they're familiar with it, whether it's stocks or real estate or bonds or CDs or whatever it is, and they're comfortable with that, and it blocks them off from all other types of potential investments. Every asset class has its day in the sun, I will tell you this. So don't get locked into, oh, stocks are always the best, or real estate's always the best, or bonds are always the best, or CDs are always the best, or precious metals are always the best. Every asset class has its day in the sun. Self-attribution bias. This is when people believe all the successful things and good decisions that have happened is because of them, and all the bad outcomes are because of other people or other things. Then there's trend chasing bias. This is when it comes to, like I talk about all the time, is chasing performance. Research demonstrates that investors do not benefit from this because performance usually fails to persist in the future. If something did really well recently, going forward, it's probably going to do less well. Say that. All right. So talking with somebody like us, trying to help you understand what your biases are, can help you avoid making bad decisions. Now our time is up. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.